please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code Taskmaster to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, star of the show, former ECW and WCW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
Very good, JP. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. What is going on with the Polynesian Pro Wrestling, that great Tales from the Territory? What'd you think about that one? That was a territory not a lot of people know a lot about.
Yeah, I booked it. At the end, we had the big stadium show. I think we had 31,000 people there. I got to work with Andre on that show. It was just a wonderful, wonderful place. When I first went in there, they were running once a month in Honolulu. By the 3 months later, we were running the whole islands as a territory. Then we were going out to Singapore, Malaysia, Hong Kong, the Philippines, Samoa, both of them. So it was a wonderful, wonderful territory. And hey, it's not bad working and living in Hawaii, right?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was looking the hot summer night that big, huge stadium show you guys had. The first one in 85 is awesome and draws, it says 20,000 people, and then they're saying it might be a little bit less, but then the next one only draws 2,000 people the following year in 86. What happened between 85 and 86?
A lot of talent left. It was sort of like the Exodus with Dusty. But a handful of guys were on the 86 show that were on the 85 show. There was turmoil there it wasn't Leah's fault. It was somebody else that took over. And it was the beginning of the end. Of the end of the beginning.
Yeah, because if you look at it, it's like you, Mark Lewin, and King Kong Bundy. Who would ever put those three? Like Bundy with you two guys. That's right. Awesome. Versus Andre, Steve Collins, and Angela Mosca.
Yeah.
Like, nice six man.
Yeah. And Flair was on the card. Magnum was on the card.
Dusty.
The Japanese boys were on the card.
Inoki.
Yeah. You know, that was a very unique place because that was like a free house, you know, because you were allowed to work. I mean, me and Mark worked against Fuji and Morocco on a show there, and they were working for the WWF, and we were working for the NWA at the time. It was before we went there full time. So, and then Inoki bought Leah a ring, and Baba sent talent over, and there was a lot of exchange. And New Japan and All Japan let the guys work, you know, against one another on the Honolulu shows. But you'd have to be very cautious of the finish, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and if you look at it, Bundy and Andre are WWF guys at this point in 85.
Right.
Was that common for Vince to let guys work other shows, or really just Polynesian Pro? I can't think of another one.
It was only Polynesian Pro that I know of. Only one that I know of. Like I said, it was like a free port she allowed because everybody wanted Leah to do well. You got to remember, this is before everybody being woke. She was the only woman wrestling promoter. And she was admired, and Peter was, you know, looked up to on not just the Samoan end, but the wrestling industry itself, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And Peter was one of the most impressive human beings I ever saw. He sort of reminds you of Ming.
Yeah, oh yeah. Was he as tough? I don't know.
It was pretty tough. I'd pay to see that fight. I mean, Peter did the same thing that Brother Ming did. Pulled eyes, broke arms, crashed heads. Supposedly he pulled Billy Robinson's eye out.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that go down?
That they got in a fight, and Peter, you know, introduced them to Anything Goes, I guess. And I'm not knocking Billy because I really like Billy. He was very nice to me in the ring when I worked with him. But, you know, this is back in the day, too, when guys would be drinking, and very seldom would the tough guys take on one another, but those especially tough guys would, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, yeah.
When you look at Polynesian Pro, like you said, obviously from 85 when they're kicking ass, and then 86, as you could see, it's a completely different program. Guys were canceling. Guys were leaving. Who was like the stalwarts, though? Like Lars Anderson, oddly enough?
Yeah, Lars was there. He owned part of the promotion, and Superfly Tui was a local guy, and Siva Afa, who was a terrific performer. I guess Morocco was he still in New York at the time?
Yeah, yep.
So when he would come home, he'd work for them, but, you know, he probably tried to hide from letting them know he was home. He wanted to go surfing.
Right.
Yeah.
What was up with Lars? I know there was like some embezzlement stuff. Was that with Polynesian Pro? Was that with another pro wrestling company? That's why he was out in Polynesian Pro.
I think it was a couple of them. You know, and then they tried to strong arm another promoter when they had Lars had kind of killed the business, and it was all over the papers because the other promoter, they had him, the police had him wired, and they said they were going to break his arm and break his face and do more harm than that. But the crazy thing is, this is how over the parties in pro wrestling was. When they went to court, they were found not guilty.
How?
You don't go, you go in front of your jury of your peers, you know what I'm saying? Probably free wrestling tickets.
Yeah, true. It's just, what a fascinating territory. Is there a lot of footage, or was there a lot of footage of the promotion?
Yeah, I actually had a TV show in Knoxville using the footage. Yeah, there was a lot of footage for that short period of time, like 85 to 86, because we did a lot of filming, and that was what made it completely different. When I got there, they were filming in a studio. You know, the interviews?
Yep.
I said, why would we be filming in a studio? I went to the North Shore. I went to Lanai, Kauai. I went to Singapore. I made them shoot the interviews on the beaches, in cave temples, and exotic places. You know, so, and it got on in a few channels in the mainland. So if you're sitting where you are in February, and you're up to your ass in the snow, and you see Polynesian Pro Wrestling come on, and you see these interviews with guys coming in off the surfboard and cutting a promo, it's going to grab your eye. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. What an interesting territory. I don't. You probably know Julio De Niro, which Julio Sanchez. He was in WCW and ECW. A buddy of mine, he was saying he used to watch it on the stock market channel really late at night. So I was like, wow, that's so weird. Like, and he's from the East Coast. He's from over here. I said, wow, I never knew that. Why the hell would it be on the stock exchange or whatever, the stock channel?
Lars Anderson, this goes back way before. Lars Anderson, even though he had a lawsuit of some sorts against the Atlanta office when Barnett was there, so they had to hire him. But Lars had a wrestling, it was called Aspen Wrestling Academy. He sold T-shirts with that on it, the symbol on it. And they didn't want to mess with him anymore. You know, they didn't want to open up a can of worms with lawsuits. So Lars reached out, and it was the Financial News Network. But before it was the Financial News Network and Lars got on, it was like a channel that was a fledgling channel that would show just about anything. And it wasn't a financial. And Lars got the tape on there. And then somehow when the financial people bought it out, they kept the wrestling on the Financial News Network.
Wow.
And, yeah, and in some areas of the country that, because of what I just said, the coolness of the tape itself, and they had stars from all over the world on it, they would accept the tape, you know what I mean? Like, I know that Mario Savoli used his tape to block other tapes from coming into his area, like in Maine and Vermont and New Hampshire. Was in Knoxville, Chattanooga. So it was around a bit, but, you know, it was one of those where it was priced out of the sky for about a year, that it burnt out. But for that year, they had, I mean, Brody and Hanson. I saw one, some clip just recently. Brody and Hanson, The Sheik, Inoki, Gary Hart, King Curtis, Don Morocco, John Studd. I mean, a host of people on that card. That was just one card. So they got talent from all over the world, which made it spectacular.
What a cool promotion. But it's awesome that Tales from the Territory and those guys covered that, because didn't expect that would be a part of the season. And I was like, wow, that's awesome. What a cool episode. Anybody that loves wrestling or likes territory wrestling or likes to learn the history of wrestling, that's a great one.
Yeah, and it's very good that, you know, Downtown Bruno Harvey Whippleman was on that one, you know. he did a hell of a job, because I came in when he was there for a little while and then went to the States. But I thought Rocky, Rocky Curtis. Rocky Iaquea did a hell of a job. You know, talk about his dad.
Where's the Prince? Where's Prince Iaquea?
That's Prince Iaquea. Oh, that's this. I use Rocky as Prince Iaquea, original one. The other one, Mike, is in Florida. He hit the lotto years ago.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you would think maybe they could get him, but he probably doesn't want to do it. Doesn't have to do any. He doesn't want
to. Well, he didn't go to Hawaii. He didn't go to Hawaii.
Oh, he never did. Wow, I'm surprised. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, he's probably too young, right?
Yeah.
So overall, you liked being over there? I mean, you can't not like living over there, right?
I loved it. You know, we were going overseas. Plus, I was working in Japan. It was a wonderful time.
All right. We got to change gears. So we're talking about something wonderful. Now we're going to talk about something maybe that's not so wonderful, not such a wonderful time. Halloween Havoc 2000. It was held on October 29th, Paradise, Nevada, at the MGM Garden Grand Arena, or really Grand Garden Arena. The attendance, 7,582. The tagline, the future of pro wrestling is here and now. The pay-per-view buys only 70,000. Ouch. Where were you at this point?
I was home. JP, what was the town that building was actually in?
They say it's Paradise, Nevada, but when you're on the actual pay-per-view, it says Las Vegas, Nevada.
I think that's why I asked you. I think it actually was in a suburb of Vegas, like Paradise.
Yeah, that's what I read into a little further. It says Paradise. It's technically not Las Vegas, but I guess it's a part of Las Vegas. And that's MGM Grand. I think everybody associates with Vegas anyway.
Right.
But the interesting thing is here, remember Havoc used to have the awesome sets? They had the cool-looking pumpkin. I mean, the awesome stuff.
Right.
This pay-per-view has nothing. It looks like almost like a house show, the way it's set up.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see it, and I was wondering if they were trying to cut budget costs. You know what I mean?
Ooh, could be. That could very well be why it looked like crap. Yeah.
I mean, at one time, the sky was the limit. They would, you know, fly guys in to make guys a special Halloween mask, put it on them, right?
Yep.
It probably cost $50,000, but I think at this period, they're really looking at the bottom line.
That huge blow-up pumpkin you guys had, somebody had it, and I had a picture of it. It was online. Somebody had it. They had it in their front yard. They didn't even know it was – and it says WWE Halloween Havoc. They have no idea what it is. They just thought it was an awesome Halloween decoration. Oh, I don't know how they got it or who bought it or crazy, but somebody from WWE must have sold it to somebody on eBay or something.
Wow, that's crazy, huh?
That is nuts.
Yeah.
Imagine having that in your front lawn. It's probably 50 feet wide.
At least. Huh?
It's awesome, though. But this pay-per-view does not have that. Interesting, though, Eric Bischoff has said a few times that he always thought Halloween Havoc was like his Starrcade or his top show. Did you ever view it that way? Did you view it as like the top pay-per-view?
I think I could relate to Eric's choosing of that. I mean, at one time, there was some way-out stuff going on there. It was very good. It was built along two things. Heat and blow-offs where the babyface got over. So you got a little bit of both sides winning, you know, on Halloween Havoc. You know what I mean? The guys that had been there and had done angles with the babyfaces were going to get their comeuppance. And the guys that were just coming in and putting heat were going to destroy babyfaces. So it was very well done, I think, early on.
To me, the way you kind of noticed that Bischoff kind of put the emphasis on Havoc, maybe over Starrcade, Hogan wasn't on all the Starrcades when he was there. He's on all the Havocs, obviously minus this one because he's gone at this point. But he's on every Halloween Havoc, but he's not on every Starrcade. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. I never thought of it that way, but I can see, obviously, Eric, let me ask you something. Did WWF at the time take October off?
No, they had their, I think it was either No Mercy, one of their lesser known pay-per-views was October.
Yeah.
And usually WCW dominated, obviously not this time because you only did 70,000, but usually WCW did pretty good in October because of Havoc.
Yeah, so that is Eric's line of reasoning, I believe, and rightfully so. You know, you load up those cards, you really don't have competition. If somebody only has money for one of the pay-per-views, they're going to go to yours.
Yeah. And Havoc, you know, just normally, not this year, but normally the sets, the Halloween stuff, the theme, it just, I don't know, me and my friends, we always thought, oh, this is the coolest pay-per-view because it's so different. We're not used to seeing like such a cool themed pay-per-view.
You know what it also reminds me of, and I don't know with if this is true, it's sort of, to me, is copying a lot of Lucha Libre stuff. Dawn of, you know, Night of the Dead, you know. It kind of leaned that way in my head. Did you?
Yeah, a little bit. It kind of has that vibe to it a little bit, which is cool.
Yeah, because, you know, All Souls Night, you know, everybody walks around. So I think it was something for people to look forward to. It was really wild, you know what I mean? For that time.
And in years prior, sometimes you guys would have a spin the wheel, make the deal, or just some cool theming. And it just always seemed like a cool pay-per-view to me. Definitely was different, and which different equals good to me for a lot of the wrestling stuff.
Right, right. As long as you don't electrocute Abdullah the Butcher, right?
Any Chamber Forest match is bad, yeah.
Yeah.
But, hey, is it so bad it's good? You know what I mean? Could it be?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that was a little ridiculous, but still, though, you know, Eddie versus Rey Mysterio, Havoc 97, everybody remembers that. I mean, there's a bunch of good moments.
Oh,
for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So Bischoff, we're talking about him. He's obviously gone at this point, and Russo and Ferrara are in. So this is going to be a completely different show. Like I said, the set is nothing. Maybe it's a budgetary thing, but the set stinks. I don't know. It's one of the things where let's see how the show is. It doesn't feel like a Havoc. It feels just like Fall Brawl or just like any other show. It doesn't have that special feeling to it. So already going in, it's not, you know, it's not great.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch it, but, you know, if that's your big pay-per-view, I think, and you're getting, you're on the downslope, I think you protect that as much as you can and spend as whatever you have to do to come out profitable on that one.
So at Fall Brawl 2000, we talked about that pay-per-view before, they promised at this show, Halloween Havoc 2000, that Sting would undergo a huge change, and it would be something monumental that we've never seen before out of Sting. And so that when this show opens, there's really not a lot of mention of that, and there isn't a big push for that. So it was weird that they would do a commercial and say that about Sting when the show comes, not even bait and switch. It's just not even just a bait with nothing. There's no switch. It's not going to happen.
What do you think caused that, JP?
Honestly, it almost to me, and I could be wrong on this, but it almost seems like creative was like, okay, we're going to do this with Sting without even asking Sting. And then all of a sudden Sting was like, we never even asked me, what are we doing here? So it seems like a creative Sting, not issue, but it definitely something where they didn't okay with him.
Right. Right. That's, I mean, I wasn't around again, I'm reiterating, but I can see that somebody came up with an idea, they put it down, they talked through back and forth between the two of them, and nobody went and asked Sting, this is what we got planned, what's your input? After all, he knows how to be Sting better than anybody else, right?
Right. I'm curious what it was. What, do they want him to go back with the yellow hair or something? But obviously they never asked him.
Yeah, they never asked him. But my take is what you just said. They probably want him to go back to the yellow hair and the colorful outfits. Is that your take on it? What else?
That's what I assume. What, I mean, what else? You going to turn him into what, something completely different? I mean, was he going to become the Undertaker? It just seemed like he was going to go and be 1990s, early 90s thing again, but that's not him, or that wasn't him at that point in his career.
Right, right. The other one may be split personality. That you know, Mutter is the Mutter and the great Mutter, right?
Yep.
Something like that. I don't know.
Could have been. Whatever it was, Sting doesn't go for it because that doesn't happen.
Right, right.
That's one of those things where like, wow, cool. What's going to happen with Sting? I wonder. And then all of a sudden the pay-per-view comes and they don't mention it and it's not a big deal. It's like, okay, I guess WWE is not credible at this point.
Your guess is as good as mine. You know what I mean? What's your take on that?
I thought a little bit of credibility issue because I was like, man, they promised us something and they didn't deliver. Is that where we're going to see more bait and switch? It's just they already were on like the downswing. You don't want to do anything to have the loyal fans like me that are ordering these pay-per-views every month. One of the 70K ordering them thinking that, okay, what the hell's going to happen? Do I need to order the next one? Are they going to switch it again? And I'm not going to get what I want after you announced it.
Yeah. One thing that I do remember people talking to me about, and this is no knock to anybody. Everybody has their own idea, but switching the belt so many times, the world title, it was sometimes switched three times on a show. I mean, I saw one time a cartoon by Gonzalez. Do you know who that is? He used to do a Vanity Fair, and he's very Richard Gonzalez, I believe his first name is. But he had this thing where it showed people in the jungle, two guys in the jungle, and there's a sign that says nothing, right? And people are worshiping it. The guy says, "Is nothing sacred?" You know. Like, so what I'm getting at is, you know, the belts were, at one time were sacred, you know what I mean? They didn't just toss them around as props. And I think that's what does, I mean, I may be way off base here, but I think that's what started to hurt boxing. You're a boxing fan.
Yep.
When they had four or five world champions, you know, it didn't mean as much. In my head, anyway.
Too many titles. Yeah, I agree. And WCW was infamous for the switches. Booker T was a 5-time champ or whatever. I think he was really 4-time in WCW. But in like a short amount of time, it was like, boom, like way too many title changes. He should have just had it for a long run.
Yeah, yeah. There's a guy, don't want to get sidetracked. There's a guy that really doesn't get his due. He was spectacular. He was spectacular. And there were sometimes when you're in the ring with guys and you look and you are in a tag match, you'd say, wow, that guy's really tight. His stuff, you can't see through it. And wow, that's fabulous. Booker was so athletic. That spinning to get off the ground. The spinneroonie.
Yep.
God, I could be doing it from 20 years ago to now, and I would be off. My fat ass would be off the ground. You know, he just was so innovative. And Stevie was another guy I don't think gets the credit. They were one of the best tag teams, and it wasn't Booker by himself. Stevie was there plodding along with him. You know what I mean? It was a great combination.
And Stevie, for this card, he's a part of the announce team with Tony Schiavone and Mark Madden. So they like Stevie as one of the announcers.
Intelligent guy. I like hearing him talk. He's very good. He's got his own podcast, right?
Yep.
And does very well.
He is so funny. I love him as an announcer because sometimes they'll say stuff that you as a fan know it's like obvious, but they never mention, and he'll say it. Like he's just going to say whatever he wants to say. And like calling women, obviously as a joke, he's like, oh, she's a yak, the villainous woman. She's acting like a yak, Tony. And he's doing stuff to try to make Tony laugh. And you could tell Tony's laughing sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of talented guys there.
I like him. Obviously, it's Tony, Mark, Ben, and him for the call, but I like him as like the color guy. I think he's good, Stevie.
I do too.
So the show opens up. The first match is a WCW World Tag Team Championship three-way dance. Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare versus the Boogie Knights of Disco Inferno and Alex Wright versus the Filthy Animals of Rey Mysterio and Billy Kidman with Conan. Match is actually pretty good for the most part. You know, obviously, it's a little bit of a cluster, but I don't mind that opening match. You know, you got certain things going on. Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare end up getting the win, and the match goes about 10 minutes. Six guys, a little bit of a cluster, tag team titles online, but it's pretty good. And all guys considered, Jindrak and O'Hare getting the win, pretty good start for them in their run.
Yeah, and I didn't see the show. Did Jindrak and O'Hare stay together long after this?
Not really, because then they end up putting O'Hare with Palumbo, and they kind of left Jindrak off with Stasiak, and then he was kind of on his own. But they didn't team up long enough, which is surprising, because I feel like O'Hare and Jindrak, out of all of the Natural Born Thrillers, I feel like those two had the best chemistry together.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I asked her. I figured they would. They look great. You know, they look like real athletes.
I don't know why they decided to go with O'Hare and Palumbo rather than, I mean, Palumbo is good too, but O'Hare and Jindrak, they had some cool double teams together. I don't know. They just worked to me like they were a good team together. I don't get the split up.
I don't either. But.
So after the match, post-match, Alex Wright kind of joins Jindrak and O'Hare as they beat up the Filthy Animals. Sergeant AWOL, a.k.a. The Wall, runs down to make the save, which immediately leads to the Hardcore Championship match between Reno of the Natural Born Thrillers and Sergeant AWOL, a.k.a. The Wall. That's a very Paul Heyman-esque booking thing. They're beating up the guy, and then the guys separate, and the two guys in the ring, match starts right then and there. No entrance. That's something I think I would have seen in ACW a lot, or Heyman style booking. I know Gabe Sapolsky used to do it in Ring of Honor a little bit, right? It's a different style of booking where the guys don't get the entrance. They're keeping the crowd hot for a certain reason. And then once the action kind of breaks away, then they start the next match.
Yeah. I mean, I know that Paul used to do it. I'm sure Gabe learned under Paul, so he could take that. And these guys were two guys trying to do Shock TV anyway, right?
Yep.
Wasn't that their thing?
Yep.
So it fits into their line of thinking also.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So Reno ends up getting the win and retaining his Hardcore Championship in about 11 minutes over Sergeant AWOL. It's actually just a fun hardcore match. They use weapons. They use this obviously fake monitor, but Reno uses the roll of the dice and gets the win. It wasn't too bad. It was kind of better than I thought it was going to be, better than I remembered it, but just a wacky, crazy hardcore match that you may have seen in ECW, like that kind of match.
Yeah, I mean, this is just me. As I look back, and you're talking about this match, you can never give a hardcore match. In my opinion, I may be wrong. Maybe there's a couple exceptions to the rule that are going to be as good as ECW's. So you're putting putting a burden on the guys. I mean, they had guys jumping off of balconies, right?
Yeah.
They had guys lit on fire. Didn't Terry Funk get lit on fire?
Yeah, he was doing the branding iron thing. Yeah.
They had the fans throw all the chairs in the ring on top of Terry and Sabu, right?
Hell yeah. Yep.
How are you going to compete with that? It's like going to a bar and order a Jameson's, and you order a Jameson's, and I order a Crystal Light. You know, it's completely different. And
yep.
You got to experiment with things, but I just thought, no matter what you do, you're not going to have a guy jump. First of all, the corporate side wouldn't let you have guys jumping on balconies. Yeah. Wouldn't let me have fire. So are you going to be giving them something that can even come close to ball stuff? I don't think so.
So the next thing that kind of happens, they show the Natural Born Thrillers in the back with Shane Douglas discussing something. But it's funny. You're like, wait, that's weird. Like, weren't the Natural Born Thrillers? And then all of a sudden they pops up on the screen earlier today. So I was like, they probably should have put that first earlier today. And then so it was not confusing because we literally just saw the Thrillers. So something is going on. Shane is obviously up to no good with those guys. And then they show Chronic talking to the State Athletic Commission. They'll have a match later against Goldberg, and they're saying, don't clear him, or, you know, or we'll end up killing him. So it's a 2-on-1 handicap match set up for later on the night, Chronic versus Goldberg, which is a part of the storyline where Russo is saying if Goldberg loses at all, he has to retire. What do you think about that?
If it's done right, everything could fit, but you got Goldberg, who's right now probably got the company on his back, would you say?
Yeah.
So you as a kid know he isn't going to lose, correct?
Yes.
You know he ain't going to. So, I mean, sometimes, I mean, it's like we were talking about when I was a kid and I went to see Frank Scapa and Argentina Rocca wrestle. Rocca was a huge baby face, and Frank Scapa was a huge baby face in Boston. And in fact, they gave him a real belt with diamonds and studs because I knew the Santos family. I mean, this thing was worth a lot of money. And I knew that neither one of them was going to do his job, you know what I mean? So.
Yep.
Yeah.
So the next matchup, the Perfect Event, Perfect Sean Stasiak, and Chuck Palumbo versus the Misfits in Action, Lieutenant Loco, who is, of course, Chavo, and Corporal Cajun, who's, of course, Lash LaRue. Just a funny line by Stevie Ray. They kept calling him Chavito, so he kept calling him Chubbito. So just a stupid little funny line. I'm sure he was trying to pop Tony or Mark Madden or something. He kept calling him Chubbito. The Perfect Event, Stasiak and Palumbo, I thought were a better team with better chemistry than when they put Stasiak with Jindrak and they put Palumbo with O'Hare. Like, I don't know why they flipped the two teams. I didn't like that. It didn't make sense. The original pairings of the Perfect Event and then O'Hare and Jindrak, perfectly fine, perfectly good. So weird that they switch them. But the Misfits in Action, in an okay match, Cajun and Loco end up getting the win. Surprisingly. So good win for the Misfits in Action over Stasiak and Palumbo.
Okay, I can go along with that. What about you?
Yeah, it's a nice little win, and we'll see where they can go. But good win. I love Lash, and Chavo is great. So it's nice to kind of see a little upset here. You know, you stay away from the predictable.
Right. And as you said, Lash was good, and Chavo, I mean, Chavo is fabulous. You know, has there ever been a Guerrero that wasn't great?
Right. They're all pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So then the next match is a mixed tag team match. The Franchise, Shane Douglas, and Tori Wilson, who looks basically the same age now as she does then, which is amazing.
It's amazing.
She doesn't age. Crazy.
Yeah.
Versus Conan and Tigress. The winners of the match are Conan and Tigress. Nothing great. Nothing to write home about here. Just a weird intergender match because Tigress, not really a wrestler. Obviously, Tori Wilson is not really a wrestler. So not a lot of work to do and to work with here for Conan and Shane. Just obviously Tigress is pretty, and obviously Tori Wilson's gorgeous. So probably just to get them out there for an intergender match to me.
Yeah. Probably, I see it the same way you do. You know, you put them on the card. You get to have a chance to get Shane and Conan on the card, and maybe you can do something in that match where you can kind of see which direction you can take Shane and Conan.
Yep.
There's any magic there.
So in the back, David Flair promises to beat his opponent tonight. Buff Bagwell, so bad, he said he's going to take his blood and give it to the guys in the white coat standing behind him. And there's two doctors that are standing behind him. The idea was that the blood could then be tested in a DNA test to prove that Buff Daddy was Stacy Keibler's baby's daddy. So, so it's not only a first blood match. Technically speaking, it's a DNA match.
I love it. Wow.
I knew you would either love this one or hate this one. So
I love it. It's so bad. I mean, come on. Wow.
To me, this is like they would say, like, oh, it's so Russo-rific, or that's such a Russo idea. This is him at this moment, like to a T. Like, wow, a DNA match? What?
Yeah. A DNA match. Wow. I mean, how do the announcers keep a straight face?
I don't know. Because I could see Tony, like, if he was, like, allowed, I could see him just ripping it apart. Like, what are we doing here? Like, right. What?
And the other thing is, David, you know, the poor guy, really, they didn't give him a chance to train, to get ready. They just threw him out there, but I thought he was very talented on the interviews. He looked like he was crazy, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And some of those vignettes that he did were great, hilarious. He did a really good job outside of the ring stuff. He did great, and character stuff.
Yeah. So if they had given him a chance to develop, no telling where he would have gone.
For sure. So Buff Bagwell ends up defeating David Flair in this first blood DNA match in about 6 minutes. Pretty damn bad match for the most part. Post-match, though, as David's bleeding and you know, we can get the first blood or the DNA sample there. Lex Luger comes out, turns on Buff, and he allows David Flair to get a blood sample from Buff to return to his doctor friends so he can find out if Buff is Stacy Keibler's baby daddy, because David very paranoid about it. So they do a little twist there, so they both get a little color.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I've been saying since we've been on this roll? Boy, it looks like a pilot for something, and it's not a wrestling show.
Not a good one for that. That is not a good wrestling angle there, the DNA match. But the next thing that comes up, Scott Steiner has a promo backstage with the beautiful Madeja. And then, of course, Pamela Paulshock is the announcer. She's asking him about the match later on. He gives a very great Steiner-esque promo talking about Booker T and his freaks and his peaks. And he's the big bad booty daddy. So it gets you pumped up for the match later on tonight that you think is the main event because it's for the world title. But oddly enough, it's not. So you know there's some sort of swerve amiss that world title match is not the main event. So just keep that in your mind for later on.
Okay.
So then the next match up is a kickboxing match. The world cruiserweight champion, Mike Sanders, with Palumbo and Stasiak of the Natural Born Thrillers, is going to wrestle Ernest the Cat Miller with Miss Jones. Well, not really wrestle. It's more of a kickboxing match. But Mike Sanders shockingly gets the win here in about 8 minutes, 30 seconds against the kickboxing master, Ernest Miller, who would probably kill, you know, me, Mike Sanders, and a couple other guys, two or three on one in a kickboxing match. But the franchise comes out, cheats, and helps, which is why we know why we were talking earlier in the night, helps Mike Sanders get the win here. So Mike Sanders beats Ernest Miller in a kickboxing match.
I got to give that, you know, we thought, or I would think when I say we, I think most of the audience would have thought that Ernest was going over. Don't you?
Yeah.
I like that swerve.
Oh, okay. Nice. It actually, for what it was, it wasn't terrible either. Like, you would think it would have been much worse. It wasn't too bad. I didn't mind it that much as far as that match is concerned.
Mike is a very talented guy.
Great talker.
Yeah.
So then, here's one that, oh my God, if you put this in a time capsule and put this one in the future, shockingly, might be one of the worst matches I've seen. And this is crazy considering who's involved, but The gimmick is awful, but that 70s guy, Mike Awesome versus Vampiro. Whew, man. You would think Mike Awesome, because of what happened before Nitro, he's set to have a world title match against the winner of Steiner versus Booker. And you think it's headed that way, but with this gimmick, oh man, I don't know. It's just a terrible gimmick, but man, he had a bus, a 70s bus that kind of comes into play, and tables, everything else. But Mike Awesome looked out of it for whatever reason. I don't know if he was injured or what, looked out of it. And Piero, I don't know what was going on. Maybe extracurricular stuff, but both of them looked completely out of it. Maybe they both didn't give a shit, but the match is awful. Mike Awesome ends up defeating Vampiro in about 10 minutes. Man, it's like a screw-up fest after screw-up. It's just weird what was going on. There was the one good thing was like the finish somehow came off with Mike Awesome with one of his awesome bombs, but man, the rest of the match, it was just a stinker. I don't know what was going on between these two. You would expect better.
Yeah, I mean, in a situation like this, you don't know what is transpiring backstage, you know what I mean? And, you know, you've made kind of a lean that maybe there was some extracurricular activities, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So it was the time, too, you know what I mean? It was that era.
I could see Mike Awesome not being too thrilled with being that 70s guy either.
Yeah, yeah, because I used to go to Japan with Mike, and he was over. And he, you know, did you ever get to see him live yourself?
Oh, yeah, yep.
He was a big, big man.
And athletic as hell.
Yeah, and as big as he looked on TV, he's one of the few guys I've ever met that were bigger in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and he could have been, they could have done something with him.
I totally agree.
Did he
definitely
wrestle
better?
Did he wrestle in that suit too?
Yeah.
That covered his body up.
Yeah. He had the, he eventually takes it off, but he would come down with it and wrestle a little bit in it, and then he would take it off. Yeah. Oh, so bad. The next matchup, the WCW United States Championship, but of course it is the Canadian Championship because Lance Storm is the champion, and he's saying that it's really the Canadian title, which I thought was pretty good and pretty clever. I mean, really got him a ton of heat that he would say was the Canadian title, not the U.S. title, so one thing I definitely liked about it, and obviously I liked him getting a push out of the whole deal. So it's Lance Storm and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, if you remember correctly, who is the Canadian heel now, versus General Rection, General Hugh G. Rection, a.k.a. Bill DeMott. So Major Guns doesn't kind of do what she's supposed to be able to do to help Storm. Duggan is not, you know, doing what he's supposed to be able to do to help Storm. So General Rection somehow, some way, ends up winning this match and becoming the new United States champion. The match goes about 10 minutes or so. It was okay. It probably could have been better without, like, the Will Duggan cheat, Will Major Guns cheat kind of stuff. And if it was just General Rection one-on-one with Storm, I'm sure it would have turned out great. But it was just okay.
Yeah, I mean, Lance Storm, to me, is one of the most talented guys. And correct me if I'm wrong, anybody that's a student of Lance comes out on top, don't they?
Usually end up going to WWE or Impact, but WWE for a period of time, yeah.
And do you want to saddle a guy with all that? I do like the Canadian heavyweight champion gimmick very much.
Yep.
But do you put him with Duggan, who was the All-American boy for a century?
I hated that. It was funny, but not good funny. Like,
yeah,
stupid funny.
So, I mean, do you saddle guys down like that? I don't know.
So then next up, Jeff Jarrett versus Sting. Now, obviously, everybody was saying, what's going on with Sting? What's going to happen? So in order for something to quote-unquote happen to Sting, it wasn't Sting. It was Jeff Jarrett was going to bring out all these Sting impersonators, and each one would be a different like version of Sting from his career. So you'd have 80s Sting, early 90s Sting. You know, each would be a different version of Sting coming out. Like the scorpion sting would come out, and they'd have all these fake stings. So that was their way of saying that there was going to be some transformation. It wasn't really going to be Sting. It was going to be all these guys throughout his career. So that was kind of the way around it. But to me, that came up pretty lame.
Yeah, I mean, where do you go with that?
Yep.
Do they just march to the ring like toy soldiers?
So basically, they just keep popping up during the match. So Sting and Jeff Jarrett will be brawling all over, and like they'll just pop up, and Sting will have to fight him off, and it's
like a video game, right?
Yeah, almost like you're going through a little. Sting had to go through his little video game tournament. He's got to beat all these guys before he gets to the final boss, who he's kind of fighting the whole time anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Just it could have been better. To me, I don't know. Just like it felt like a bait and switch, and you couldn't really do anything with it. Nothing. Sting wasn't really going to change. So that the excuse was like, oh, Jarrett was behind the transformation of Sting. He was just doing it to make fun of Sting. Wasn't buying it. Didn't like it.
Why do you saddle two great performers, two guys that draw money, with all this bullshit?
Yep.
Can't you just have Sting and Jarrett? I mean, show the tail of the tape, show the history of the championships they've won, show a bunch of good stuff, show them training, make some nice video packages.
Yeah.
Rather than being in the middle of a video game.
So it's funny, 5 years later in TNA, Sting and Jarrett, you know, have a basically straight up match. And obviously, you know, the guitar gets to play, but they had a great match, but it wasn't all the Gaga bullshit going on. It was a good match.
Yeah.
So if they could have done it 5 years later, they could have done it here. And it ended up being a pretty disappointing Sting, Jeff Jarrett match. Basically, Jarrett gets the win here with the guitar and the help of the five fake Stings. So I know it kind of looks like, yeah, he's cheating and, you know, He's a heel, but he really needed that much help to beat Sting, basically.
Not four. Not three.
Yeah, five. It was five fake Stings, yeah.
Jesus. Well, next time in the return, he'll have to have 10 of them.
Yep. So it looks like, to me, a little weird thing here that happens in the back. Booker T is being interviewed by Pamela Paulshag, and he says, hey, my match is up next for the title versus Scott Steiner. I want to give Goldberg a little bit extra time to prepare for the main event. Weird, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Why would a guy do that?
And kind of sacrifice his own self? Like he's going to wrestle quicker? He's not going to give Goldberg a time? I don't know. Weird explanation. But you knew something was up with the match. Like something had to be amiss. Like there wasn't going to be a straight finish or something. So, of course, the match happens. Booker T versus Scott Steiner for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. The match is actually pretty good. It goes about 13 minutes, as you expect from those two.
Right.
But, of course, Scott Steiner cheats, and there's a DQ finish. Booker T gets the win, thus realizing, even, you know, as a 18-year-old fan at this point in 2000, I'm realizing something was amiss. Something was going to happen. There wasn't going to be a title change, or there wasn't going to be a clean finish, because why wouldn't this be the main event? And now we have our explanation, because there's a DQ finish, and obviously the crowd was not happy about it.
Were you?
No, I felt like I was kind of swerved into thinking, like, man, I pay for the pay-per-view. I thought Steiner was going to finally get the WWE World title and win. I kind of got screwed. I know he's the heel, but I kind of got screwed there a little bit.
And here's something that I was thinking after we talked last week. You brought something up, and I really thought about it. You know, we ask people, fans, to watch, to invest their time to watch our show, right? And hopefully we lay out a storyline that they buy into. They help drive our ratings. Yet we can't put the time in to come up with something that we don't have to have a non-finish. So they can have said, oh, I paid my money, but I got a non-finish. I didn't get a non-finish like you and I were talking about as kids. We knew that this wasn't going to happen. Don't you think that if we did I'm not going to say it can never happen. I mean, it's like Wilder and Fury on the first fight, the draw, right?
Yep.
A lot of people didn't like it, but I did. I mean, Fury, Fury gets up like the Undertaker.
Yeah. I mean, oh, yeah.
And they were here, and they had a hell of a fight. So, yeah, and it built up for the second one, and that made a lot of sense. But on the second one, he beat him. They both got knocked down, but Fury went over. So I'm saying, if we expect people to put their money on the pay-per-view, we need to put our heads to a pen and paper and come up with a storyline. And a storyline that makes sense, not some off-the-wall DNA test.
And the thing with Steiner here is, so he's going for the title but gets DQ'd, almost like doesn't care. So it's like, why doesn't Steiner care about winning the title? They almost trying to make him a maniac. Then he beats up all the security afterwards. So then it's almost like, man, this guy is so cool. I wish he would have beat Booker T. Who's the baby face? Like, you almost rooting for Steiner because he's kicking everybody's ass. He just looks like a complete monster. But the only thing was like, okay, but he didn't care about winning the title. That was kind of weird. Like, he should have wanted to win the title.
You know the thing about Scott, and I've said this to you before. I think when I book something, what a poster would look like.
Yeah.
Scott and Goldberg face to face. Scott, the Booker.
Yeah.
Scott and Sting. Yep. You know. And I'm with you. The more Scotty tried to be a heel, the more the people accept him as a babyface.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, he was so over the top. The addition thing. That I think about that sometimes. You know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. 33 1/3% chance.
Yeah. And the people, it was so humorous, but the people loved it. And then here's a guy that takes a tiger to the ring. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean,
and he's got Medeja, who looks like a million bucks with him, and he had the other Shakira, the other girl at one point, looked like a million bucks.
Yeah, and here he is. Nobody backed up when he had the tiger. Everybody else would have shit if someone came out with a tiger, ran out of the building, because they thought Scott could beat the tiger. I mean, he had everything going for him. And I probably was at fault, too, that, you know, but we were saddled a little bit about creative control.
Yeah.
And if the creative control had lost to Scott, how are you going to get the belt away from Scott? I would have loved to seen go back. You know, you mentioned going back in time, a time capsule. I would love to go back in time and started a program with Scott to get him over and build on that for a couple of years. So when, and have him, I don't care if he's a heel or a baby face, he's a baby face, right?
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I put the belt on the heel and I let Scott and them just have insulting interviews like we had all up to the run up to yesterday, right?
Yeah.
And put it on him and let it stay there for a while.
Yeah.
See how far you could go with him.
Yeah.
I think that everybody missed the boat on Scott.
I agree. Eventually, the next month, he'll end up winning the pay-per-view. We'll probably talk about that another time. But, man, he was over like Rover. He was awesome to me. I love him. But the main event of the evening is up next. Handicap match, Chronic, Brian Adams and Brian Clark versus Goldberg. Thing is here, Chronic is super over. I mean, they kind of did the APA gimmick where if you paid him, they would cash checks and break necks and to do this whole kind of cool thing. Kind of started as like a marijuana joke at first, Chronic, but they had cool theme music. I don't know, something about them was they clicked together, they had good chemistry. So, of course, what do you do? have him lose to Goldberg in a 1-on-2 handicap match, which is crazy. Like, this monster tag team, I know you're trying to stack the deck against Goldberg, but to me, it was just funny. It's like, really? Couldn't Goldberg wrestle somebody else? They could have done a different thing, but Goldberg ends up beating them 1-on-2. Wasn't bad, but wasn't good. It was just, I don't know, it was just there, and Goldberg gets to win to end the pay-per-view.
Besides, this is just my opinion because I didn't see the match, but besides hurting Chronic, it hurt Goldberg. Because nobody could believe that he could beat both of them in the same.
In 4 minutes, yeah. It was only 4 minutes.
Yeah. You know, something that I forgot about. I'm not going to have the guys correct all of them. In St. Louis, Bruiser beat Fritz von Erich and Pat O'Connor in a handicap match, okay? Now, that if I tell you that, it just sounds crazy, right?
Right.
Because of who they are.
Yeah.
But in St. Louis, they were sometimes not knowing the history of territories and not knowing the bookers. Bobby Bruns was very cerebral as a booker. He was very, very smart, to repeat myself. But Bobby's handicap match was one guy wrestled one guy, and if he beat him, he wrestled the second guy next, and there was no interference. So it got the guy over, but it really didn't hurt the other guys. You know what I mean?
Right.
So maybe if we, you know how I talked about patents all the time, so you're sick of it? Maybe we shouldn't be following all these patents. It's like I happen to go to a show just for CCW. They have some very, very talented guys, right? And my time, I don't want to sound like a cranky old bastard, but I said to a few of them, I said, can I ask you why you get kick pads on? I said, are you a judo guy? No. Are you a karate guy? No. Kickboxer? No. I said, why do you do it? Well, the other guys do it. I said, let me ask you this. Does Roman Reigns wear them? Does Brock Lesnar wear them?
Right.
Does The Rock wear them? Why do we follow something? And I'm not knocking people that wear them, but you have to have some kind of background, or at least a fictitious background, don't you?
Yeah. Yep. You should.
Yeah.
So what do you think overall of this pay-per-view?
God, it just got me confused. I'm sure, you know, I think the high spot for me, the highlight for me would have been, if I saw it, David Flair's interviews.
I could see that.
Yeah. Because he did it very well.
He was pretty damn on point.
Yeah.
You gotta love some David Flair. To me, not a terrible pay-per-view, so to speak. I mean, I've seen worse, but not a good one either. The opener was good. The second match was good. And obviously Booker T versus Scott Steiner, despite the finish, was pretty good for the most part. But let's hit the plugs. You follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @2manpowertrip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And of course, you follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Go to Pro Wrestling Tees, ProWrestlingTees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.